Welcome everyone to another episode of the Jetstream off-season edition. He's the Jets' inaugural captain and the first player to lead the team out in the A-League. He made 27 appearances for the Jets, including 23 A-League appearances and 3 pre-season cup, one in the Oceania Championships as well. Welcome to the podcast, Ned Zilich.
Thanks for having me on.
No worries, Ned. Someone with your esteemed profile in the game, I thought we'd start with a question that's been bugging a number of members of the Jetstream, and that is, which of these items belong in the fridge, and which of these pantry? Which of these belong in the pantry? So it's an opening question. Tomato sauce, Ned, in the fridge or in the pantry?
Fridge.
Fridge, okay. Tim Tams, fridge or pantry?
Fridge.
Okay. Vegemite.
Don't eat it.
Don't eat it, not too sure. Not a staple in the Zelich household. One that's been controversial and caused a lot of problems within our group is butter. Fridge or pantry?
Fridge.
Fridge. Well, that's good because Grant, our producer and host of the Jetstream, seems to think it belongs in the pantry. We think that he needs to have his head examined. So, thanks for answering that. Let's get straight into it. You were playing in Austria prior to returning home, and your arrival in the league was held in the similar fanfare to that of Dwight York. And the first question comes to us from one of our listeners, and that's Gaz Fish. Why did you choose the Jets?
I received a call in Austria from Remo Nogarotto, and we pretty much stayed in touch for close to a month before I actually made the decision, and we had some really good talks, and obviously the team that Rem put together as well was a really good one, and just thought it'd be a good move to come back and play for the Jets, and knowing quite a few of the players as well made the decision pretty easy.
It was certainly a young and a team that had a lot of young potential stars in it and quite a few established players as well. Were there other clubs that were chasing your signature, and was the captaincy part of the agreement to come to the club?
No, I only had the discussions with the Jets, and you know, the captaincy was just something that Remo threw up back then, and clearly I wasn't going to knock that back. Oh, it wasn't really a factor in making the decision. And I mean, it wasn't an easy decision to make because I'd just extended my contract as well in Austria. And, you know, I just thought it'd be a good move, and it was an exciting time as well with the new league that was being put together. And, in the end, I made the decision, and certainly no regrets. Clearly, there were a few issues that happened at the back end, but my memories of the Jets are all good, and I really enjoyed living in the city as well. Made a lot of friends, and it was a really good year.
Oh, great! Well, we certainly enjoyed having you, and we'll probably. We'll probably touch on some of these issues as we get further throughout this interview. But the OCC game was the very first appearance that you had for the Jets, and it was something that came quite soon after the announcement of your signing. You went straight into the game, 120 minutes plus penalties against the Mariners. Do you remember much from that game?
Yeah, I remember the game. It was really intense, and clearly there was a lot of expectation as well. The fact that we put together a really good side with the Jets and the Mariners were pretty much an unknown sort of factor, but we knew it'd be a tough game, and clearly it was. But I just felt, you know, we didn't really have that much time with training and all the rest. I mean, I flew over from overseas and I think I had probably about 10 days or something with the boys. There wasn't much time. It all felt a bit rushed. And although I thought we performed well in that game, certainly we didn't reach the potential that we showed in a number of games during the season. But in saying that, it was sort of difficult. I mean, we had JP as a coach, and then Richard Money came in and obviously started playing a completely different style and a style that a lot of players sort of weren't used to as well, and took time to pretty much adapt. So there were a lot of issues there, a lot of challenges for a lot of the players and obviously us as a team. So I felt it took quite a while for us to really click as a side.
Yeah, okay. That's really interesting, because the Jets, I guess, as it got closer to the A-League season with some of the announcements of players that they had, they actually started the season as favourites for the title. I mean, with names such as yourself and Jade North, who was emerging as a Socceroo, Nick Carl, Ante Milicic, Richard Johnson, who had been overseas playing for Watford, and also some later inclusions as we go further through the season. Was there a real sense of expectation through the group that you could achieve something special?
Oh, yeah, of course there was expectation. I mean, if you look at all the names and... And I'm someone that's always been, you know, as a player, to first look at your own performances and analyze basically what you've done as a player. But like I said, there were a number of challenges there, and I just thought the style of play that we're playing. I mean, I remember Richard didn't really want us playing out from the back and playing a lot of long balls from the goalkeeper. So it was we were thrust into a situation where we were fighting for a lot of second balls. And if you look at the players that we had, it was something that a lot of us weren't used to. So, and then the system that we were playing as well. I mean, I pretty much came back and, you know, we had JP as coach and it was sort of going to play a three at the back system,
right.
4-3, 3-4-3 sort of thing. And then in the end, we're playing a 4-4-2 with Richard, which is fair enough. It's his philosophy and pretty much all that he knew. So it took a while for us to adapt. And in the end, I was playing as you know, a central defender. In a back four and we weren't really playing out from the back, so there were a lot of challenges there for us. But in saying that, there were quite a few games, I think after the first 7 or 8 games, we really clicked. I remember playing down in Adelaide where we beat them 4-2, where we played some really good football. So there were games where we played really well, but we just couldn't produce it on a consistent basis. I mean, we still got to the finals, but it was kind of disappointing how it finished. I thought as well that in the final series that we had against the Mariners, I remember in Gosford, had a huge chance actually at 1-1 to go ahead, and a bit of a missed opportunity there as well in that game. So... It sort of ended on a disappointing note. I thought we could have gone further in the final series, but it was just one of those things.
If we can try and put the audience and the listeners into your shoes, you're standing in the tunnel at what was then known as Energy Australia Stadium, about to lead the home team out to the first game of the brand new A-League in the match against Adelaide United. There's 13,160 people at the ground. Were you nervous? What's going through your mind as you're walking out into that stadium in front of a rapturous and cheering crowd in the very first match of the new competition?
No, not nervous. Just pretty much just focused on my own performance and hoping that, you know, we could kick the season off with a win. And clearly everyone was watching that first game, and so there was a bit of pressure there on all of us to perform, not just perform, but to get off to a good start, because we obviously were one of the favourites. You know, we just remember that night, we just nowhere near reaching our potential, and Adelaide deservedly beat us 1-0. It was a tough game, but... like I said, I think we were probably at about 50-60% of our playing capacity.
After that match, came the very first A-League F3 derby against the Mariners, and given the circumstances of the OCC match where Andrew Durante had his leg broken, what was it like playing against the Mariners, building up what was one of the strongest rivalries in the league? Was that something that you bought into and the rest of the team bought into as well?
Oh, well, I mean, to be honest, that first game, we were all sort of working our way into, what this game means. So I think it became really fierce later on in the season, and especially in the final series when we came up against each other. Then it was a real derby, a real battle. And but, you know, with everything being new, clearly you needed time to basically get into that way of thinking. So we're all sort of curious about that first game. And remember, I think we drew 1-1. So it was our first point of the season. And it was a tough game as well. But we knew that, knowing how difficult it was against the Mariners in that preseason tournament. So, yeah.
You talk about how the rivalry continued to build over the years, and you've had an illustrious career overseas, let's be honest. How did that derby and the atmosphere that was created compare to some of the other derbies that you'd been to? I mean, it's probably not fair to compare to some of the larger stadiums that you've been to overseas and played in, but was out on the field and the intensity from the crowd, is it similar or is it, was it a level below what you'd experienced overseas?
Well, nothing compares to Dortmund Schalke, absolutely nothing. And I was actually talking about this with a couple of friends a few days ago. And I mean, I'd played in the Munich derby as well, but it wasn't close. You know what I mean? That was really fierce too. But Dortmund Schalke was something else. I mean, the build up to games and just how important that game was. Not just for the players and obviously for officials of the club and the coaching staff and all the rest, but the fans, it was just amazing. And the fiercest atmosphere that I've ever experienced in any game, Dortmund Schalke by far.
Yeah, okay. That's good to know, because people often wonder what it's like as a player being a participant in different derbies around the world. So thank you for that insight. A cult hero during the time that you were at the club was Uruguayan Mateo Corbo. He certainly wasn't one to shirk a challenge. What was it like being alongside him and playing on the same field next to someone who, I guess, was liable to the odd brain snap?
I really enjoyed having Mateo in the team. And, I mean, like you said, he had a fiery character and... I thought he had a bit of a slow start, but then really, once he was really fit, really showed his potential. And it was just unfortunate. Later on in the season, copped an injury and was out for about 4 or 5 weeks, something like that. Mm. And I remember him coming back later on, I think a couple of games before the season ended, but just couldn't reach the same sort of form. But a really good guy, and like I said, when he was fit, he was a great player for the Jets.
You mentioned before an Adelaide a game against Adelaide in round 8. Very, very good memory, Ned. The Jets won 4-2. You scored your first goal in that game. Do you remember the goal?
I do, yeah. I do. It was a free kick from the side. I think it was Nicky Carl.
It was.
That whipped it in and got on the end of it to make it 3-2. But it was a fantastic game down there, and always loved playing at Hindmarsh. And especially that game was just brilliant. I think we took the lead 2-0 and then they got back to 2-2. So it was sort of all over the place. But great atmosphere and a fantastic game of football.
Yeah, you're right in what you say. I mean, it's a game where we actually had 2 own goals scored. The first was from Matthew Kemp, it was an own goal, and Nick Carl then got a second one not long after, and you scored straight after Matteo Corbo had conceded an own goal. So, 4-2, it was a great game for the Jets, and it actually started a period of 12 matches where the Jets would only lose two matches in that period. That actually left the team second behind then runaway leaders Adelaide, which makes that win in earlier in the season all the more impressive. You spoke earlier about difficulties bedding the team in and playing to what the new manager wanted, and then you go on the team go on this absolutely fantastic run. What clicked or what changed to contribute to those results?
Well, we adapted to the style that we were playing and made a few adjustments here and there. And I mean, obviously there were discussions going on like behind the scenes, and I think it's normal that when things aren't going well, especially me as captain and a few other of the boys with a bit of experience, to basically sit down and have a chat. To the coach, to the coaching staff, and work out what can we do here to, you know, to change things, because it's just not good enough. So a few adjustments were made. A few times we went back to playing a back three and became a bit more unpredictable and tried a few different things. So then, you know, we started actually having players feel comfortable in their positions and also reach their potential. So it was a really good run for the boys, and obviously there was confidence in right throughout the team, which was really important. And the quality was always there. It was just a case of getting the best out of every player, and we started doing that. It was just unfortunate the way the season ended. Again, you know, I thought sort of threw it away towards the end of the season. I remember we had a great match against Melbourne Victory, won, I think it was 2-0 at home. We're absolutely flying.
Yep.
And then things crumbled towards the end against Queensland, lost at home against Perth Glory as well, ended up just scraping into the finals.
Yeah.
But I remember we changed, really good performance against Melbourne Victory, and then I think it was Stewie Mishalik who was then replaced, and he was extremely vital for us. But I think after that, didn't play. And then, which is something that I never understood, and there was a bit of friction behind the scenes, things that happened at a club, yeah. You know.
Yep.
So then it all sort of fell apart towards the end of the season, which was unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great lead in, and I'll come back to that point about how the club finished that run towards the end of the season. But it's interesting what you say about how things click, and it was sort of around that time actually that the club introduced as a mid-season recruit Vaughan Coveney from South Melbourne, who we're going to have on the podcast later in the week. And it's got to be one of the I look at the strike force that the Jets had at their disposal at that stage with an Ante Milicic and a Vaughan Coveney, a young and up-and-coming Labano Haliti, and Franco Parisi also at that point knocking in a few goals, all in front of a creative genius like Nick Carl. You've got to think that the team just had goals in them. I guess we'll go back to that point about the Jets suffering those heavy defeats that you mentioned to the Roar at home and to Perth to finish the regular season, and the Jets just scraping into fourth. The team didn't go into the semi-finals against the Mariners with momentum. How do a team that are on a bad run, how hard can it be for them to turn around that momentum? And did the team look at it like we're continually on this bad, well, we've suffered some really heavy defeats? Or do we look and go, it's the finals, it's a brand new ball game?
I mean, you know, you have to try and think of it that way to basically forget about what happened in the previous few weeks. But I think it was just a bit of a shock for us to go from a period where, you know, we're winning games, we're playing extremely well, to then all of a sudden just crumbling in those last couple of games. So there was that initial shock where a lot of talks took place and I spoke to the boys and, you know, it was a case of trying to get certain, because every player's different as well, you know. Some can get over it quicker than others, and others are stay affected and lose a bit of confidence. So I thought we performed well actually in those couple of games in the final series. Just unlucky some of the goals that we conceded. And like I said, I mean, we took the lead down in Gosford. In that second leg game, it was looking really good. I had a few chances to basically steal it in the end, but it just didn't work out. So, I mean, you need a bit of luck as well in those sorts of games, and we just didn't have it. But the performances were good, I thought, considering the way we finished the regular season.
You came back to the league in its first incarnation. How did the A-League, in terms of quality, compare to when you left Australia to go overseas with the old NSL? How was the standard? Was it different?
You know, it's always tough to compare. But I think the thing that sticks out most was, I mean, there were a lot of good players in the A-League, but it was new, and, you know, teams needed time to play a certain way and all the rest. And so it was just, I think, logical that teams would need time to actually click and play some really attractive football. Whereas when I left the NSL in the early 90s, I mean, there was a lot of really good individual players running around, and teams were playing some really attractive football. So I think it's unfair to compare. Mm-hmm. Difficult anyway, but unfair as well, because it was just a different time.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. You ended up at the conclusion of the season having knee surgery. Had you played with that injury for some time?
My knee flared up a couple of weeks before the start of the season. And, I mean, you know, I obviously throughout my career had a few knee operations and had a few issues and all the rest. And then I remember we did some pre-season stuff and I think it was after a run out at Blackbutt. Really tough workout. And it was a tough workout, and all of a sudden my knee flared up, and then I had a few sessions out at the doctor, and it wasn't looking good, but basically said we're going to have to try and manage this throughout the season. And there were quite a few games where I'd play and then just wouldn't train for the next 3 or 4 days. So it was a case of just managing. And then there were times as well where it felt really good. Wow, it was just one of those things.
That's amazing to think that it flared up in pre-season. And what's even more impressive is the fact that you didn't miss a game while you were playing for the Jets. That's just really... really good, and in fact, you're only substituted twice, I think, during that time as well. So
No, but like I said, it was. I mean, we knew a couple of weeks before the season what was going on inside the knee, and then, like I said, it was a case of just managing it and not doing things, you know, in training that especially those couple of days after games that would keep the swelling up, because it always swell up after games. It was just a case of, you know, getting the swelling out and then not doing too much in those first days. So it was really managed well from medical staff, and it was good to actually get through the whole season.
Yeah, great. Not long after you had the surgery, you departed the club and headed back overseas, despite having a year left on your contract. What were the circumstances around your departure from the club at that time?
Look, there's a few things that happened that I don't want to get into.
That's fine.
There were a few things that obviously I wasn't happy with, and a few discussions took place, and then I had an opportunity overseas to join up with an ex-teammate of mine who just got into coaching. So I made that decision, and I mean, but a few things happened, like I said, that I don't want to get into. It was sort of an unfortunate end to my time at the Jets. But like I said, for me, it's the good memories certainly stick out. And like I said, I really enjoyed my time and loved the city, really fell in love with the city. Because a lot of people were sort of skeptical when I made the decision, saying, yeah, you know, why come back and why go to Newcastle? Why not go somewhere else? You know, the things you sort of hear from people. But I was firm on the decision. And like I said, I didn't regret it and really enjoyed my time there.
Yeah, look, it's certainly something that I know that a lot of Jets fans appreciate, having had the opportunity to watch a player with your stature in the game be able to run around at Hunter Stadium every second week. So it's certainly something that I remember, it's an opportunity that you don't realise is in front of you until it has gone. And so that's certainly, from a fan, we're really appreciative that you chose Newcastle.
No, but it's for me as well. It's, I mean, I've had quite a few clubs in my career, and you know, I'll never forget the camaraderie within the team as well, and that's something that you don't forget, you know, post career. The sort of friends that you made in the city and the teammates as well, and I keep in touch with quite a few of the boys even now, you know, from back then, because it was such a great time and there were some really good characters within the team. So, yeah.
Yeah. Look, you headed overseas when you were 21, and there's always a debate that goes on about when is a good time for a player to head overseas. What advice, because we have a lot of young listeners that may be aspiring to bigger and better things within the game, what advice would you give to a player who is looking to head overseas, and where would you recommend they go?
It's always tough to actually recommend, because it always comes down to what options does someone have. I think from my personal experience, the main thing is just to be persistent, and you know, you have a goal and want to achieve something, and to not give up, because there were a number of opportunities that I actually had to go overseas before I actually signed in Dortmund, where things didn't work out. I remember having a trial at Leeds when I was 19, and the club wanted me, but I couldn't get a work permit. So it was sort of a great experience going over there and training with a club like Leeds, and spent a fantastic week there, but shattering at the same time that I couldn't get a work permit. And then, you know, come back to Australia and then sort of start again. And then a year later as well, I went over for trials and things didn't work out. I had to come back. And then 6 months later, I was off with the Olympic team and obviously the games against Holland, and then signing for Dortmund. So it's like you just never know what's around the corner. And that's why it's important to keep persisting and you know, to achieve those goals.
No, that's fantastic advice, and certainly hope that helps. If it helps someone along their career, that's terrific. You're now a commentator on Fox Sports. Would you say, is it harder playing or is it harder commentating?
You know, it's hard to compare it. Two different things. I mean, I really enjoyed playing and really enjoyed just the whole unpredictability about the game and training sessions and the game on the weekend and the adrenaline rush and all the rest, and that feeling of scoring goals and winning. So it was great playing, but I've enjoyed commentating. But I'm sort of the type as well, you know, I've been doing that now and still enjoy doing it. But I don't like to sort of look too far ahead into the future. Like I said, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and certainly is completely different to some of the stuff that I have been doing, like sitting in the studio and analysing the game. It's a whole different ball game, so to say, actually being pit side and commentating for 90 minutes.
Do you think you'd ever get into coaching?
I've always been interested, and I've done a few things here and there, and also done a lot of travelling and spent a lot of time at different clubs and different countries. So it's certainly something that's that I'm still looking at, still on the agenda. But like I said, I don't really like to looking too far ahead. It's sort of like making spur of the moment kinds of decisions. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. You said you've been analysing when you're working with SBS. You were taking on the analysis role and also now commentating with Fox Sports. What would you say has been the biggest change in the A-League since you played back in season one?
It's a tough question. Certainly, some of the players that have come in recently, like the Del Pieros, like Heskey, for example, at the Jets, some really big names. I mean, clearly back then you had someone like Dwight York. But I think it's sort of the expectation has changed a lot now. The fact that people still, after experiencing someone like Del Piero, did extremely well, and people would like to continue seeing these kinds of players coming to the country. But I think as well, I've seen a lot of good young players come up recently as well, and it's good to see that quite a few coaches are giving young players the opportunity. So, but I mean, it's like I told you earlier on the interview, I think when you start a new league, you know, clubs need time to basically get things together and click. I mean, you saw it with Melbourne Victory. I mean, they were a disaster in that first season.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, you know, a few changes here and there and adjustments and learn from mistakes. And then all of a sudden you can build a great club. So it's something that needed time.
This is a question from again, online, in preparation. You've got a catchphrase of individual brilliance. Sorry, I almost threw that off there. How did all that start?
How did it start? I don't even know, to be honest with you. I don't even know. I really don't know. I'm sure that I was sitting in a studio somewhere analysing and it just came out. So I can't even remember. I can't even remember which game it was. It just, there. Yeah.
Look, if there's someone who's listening to this podcast, you can tweet me at Jetapal, and you can tweet Ned at Ned Zelich, and you can let us know. If you remember how it started, by all means, please add to the conversation. Put us both out of our misery.
I'm sure it was just, well, I mean, you know, we all love seeing great team performances, but there really is nothing better when you know, someone can do something like a Maradona in 86, you know, go past 5-6 players. So we love seeing that spark from certain players that can change games. So I'm sure it was one of those games where something like that happened.
All right, so we've got a couple of short questions that will finish off the interview. And we've been asking these to all the other people, other ex-Jets that we've been interviewing as well. Are you still playing football?
Yes.
Yep.
Have a kick with mates. But not on not in an official capacity. It's okay. Just sort of. I was going to say fun and games, but when we get together, there's a lot of, I'd say vicious tackles.
White line fever.
Yeah.
Who was your roomie with the Jets, and who was the most annoying roommate you ever had?
I was rooming mostly with Matteo Corbo. At the Jets, but it changed at times as well because of all his injuries and all the rest. So, but the most annoying, it's a tough question, the most annoying.
You can say the most annoying habit someone had.
probably Paul Agostino. We used to room together at 1860 Munich.
Yep.
And he was pretty annoying when he used to start snoring at night.
Who was the best player you played with during your career?
The best, I mean, a lot of really good top quality players that I played with, big names as well, especially at Dortmund and guys like Matthias Sammer and Julio Cesar, the Brazilian, who was absolutely brilliant, Thomas Hessler at 1860 Munich. But I'd have to say a Swiss guy, Stefan Schapuisat. I actually remember coming across to Dortmund after the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about him. You know, he wasn't one of these big names that everyone knows. And I remember those first couple of weeks after getting to Dortmund from the Olympic Games, because I pretty much arrived in Dortmund, I think, 3 or 4 days before the first game of the season. And those first couple of weeks, I mean, obviously needed a bit of time to adapt to training and all the rest. This guy, some of the things that he'd do at training was absolutely unbelievable. Was running circles around players, basically. So he was without a doubt the best player. Some of the quality that I got to see from him, not just in the games, but just seeing him day in, day out of training, was absolutely sensational.
What position did he play?
Striker.
Oh, right. Okay. Good. I have to excuse my ignorance. I've never heard of him. So that's interesting. I'll be looking him up after this interview. Did you have any pre-game superstitions?
No, not really. Just small things like putting the boots on to the right foot to start with. That was the only thing that I used to do.
Okay. Was there any really weird ones that you came across during your time?
From teammates?
Yeah,
from
teammates. No? Okay.
Not really.
What team do you support?
What team do I support?
Yeah. Who's your team?
As in?
Football. You can have a couple of teams. That's okay.
Well, I mean, the one that's closest to my heart is Napoli.
Okay, right.
Serie A,
yep. Do you think they'll let go of Gonzalo Higuain this year?
Oh, I hope not.
If you didn't play football, and this is our last question, if you didn't play football, what do you think you would have been doing?
What would I have been doing if I didn't play football? That's a really good question. Probably some other sport.
Okay.
I used to play all sports growing up, but I was really into tennis and basketball big time. So, and played both games pretty good. So probably one of those if I really spent a lot of time. I used to love cricket as well.
Yeah, okay.
So throw that one in as well. Those three. Would have been one of those three.
Jeez. You could have been opening the batting with Mark Taylor or backing up the middle order with Steve Waugh or yeah. Mark Waugh or something.
Well, there you go. Well, it's tough though as a kid. I mean, you get to play all sports, but you have to invest, obviously football, investing a lot of time in that. So playing the other sports suffered a bit, but thought, you know, quite often what would have happened if I put that amount of time into another sport. You just never know.
Well, we're glad you made we're glad you made the choice for football. And look, I'll throw one more in. Who do you think is going to be the Euros winner?
I really like Germany, the way they're going about things. So if they can beat France, then obviously I can see Germany winning, but it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a tough game against France. Germany.
Okay. I should add to our listeners as well that we're recording this on a Thursday evening, with Portugal having beaten Wales this morning and France and Germany to come tomorrow morning. Ned Zelic, thank you very much for your time talking to us today. It's been enlightening. We really enjoyed watching you on the pitch, and thank you for spending time talking to the Jetstream today.
No worries. Anytime. Thanks, guys.
No worries.